Hello, and welcome to a convention spotlight episode on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, I will be talking about a convention I recently attended. In this episode, I am joined by my sister Kay, and we're going to have a discussion about C2E2 2019. We just went there. It's in Chicago, and waited until we got back to record this, because conventions can be fairly busy for us.
Yes.
And it's interesting, because this is a one of the major conventions in the nation. For me, it's a little bit different kind of a convention than, say, San Diego and whatnot, because for us, there's a bigger contingent of hanging with friends and stuff. We tend to stay with some people. We've got other people we do dinner with every night and stuff. It's a lot of fun. I really enjoy it. But it's one where, while the convention is what gets us out there, it's not like the be-all, end-all of the trip, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So we flew out on
Thursday.
Thursday. We ended up doing dinner at an Italian place.
Yes.
I forget the name of it.
De Luca's, I think.
Sure, we'll go with that. It was good. Had gluten-free stuff, so I was very happy. Don't do pasta too often. Was fun. Good time hanging with the friends. Mm-hmm. And then Friday was when the convention actually started. So we got there. Let's see. We did breakfast first, and then got to the convention center around, I'm going to say, 11 a.m. ish.
Yeah, 10:30, 11 thereabout.
Yeah. I've long since gotten over the need to be at some of these conventions during the crazy as the doors open kind of stuff.
Yeah. Well, and this one had metal detectors as you entered. So there was a bit of the, I almost want to say, slow you into single file lines as you enter.
And they had
a dozen, at least
a dozen.
Yeah.
So it went surprisingly fast.
Yeah.
But it's like going through a lower version of airport security or something.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that they do it. It's a hassle, but it's kind of needed these days, unfortunately.
Sad, but true.
I mean, after that incident that almost happened at Phoenix, I guess it was a year or two back, maybe a little longer now, they've got to, you know, make sure everybody's safe at these things. And when we first got there, we pretty much just walked the floor, I think.
Yeah, that was most of what I did Friday.
Yeah.
Walk the floor and visit with friends who had booths and tables.
The layout of C2E2, by and large, is fairly good. Nice wide aisles. But there's an aspect where I maybe it's just my OCD. I like to go down an aisle, turn, you know, go up the next aisle, down the next, you know, kind of a thing. And with, you know, the Marvel booth being extra wide and a few others, you've kind of got to cut through one booth to get back to the aisle. Or
well, and they have a tabletop gaming area,
yeah,
and a video gaming area that are kind of barriers to just moving through the convention.
And along kind of the back left and way back wall from where you enter and stuff was where they had the autographs and stuff. And I saw those at a distance. I never actually got up close to any of those.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of walked along the edge to get a sense of it, but yeah.
I couldn't even tell you. I mean, I saw where the voice actors were on one area and where some of the others were, but I'm not even sure I could tell you everybody they had there.
Yeah, I don't think I could either.
I'm actually curious if, because one of the things that's interesting with the McCormick Place Convention Center is they've got two kind of raised areas for, like, I don't want to say food court, but a place to get food and stuff like that. I'm wondering if from the further back of the two, there would have been good vantage points to all the celebrities.
Yes, and there were security people yelling at the people up there, no cameras, you cannot take photos from up there.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. Because there were no candid photos being allowed to be taken in the lines for the autographs. So there were people who, once they realized that, were trying to go up to the back area of that and just kind of shoot over the lines.
Absolutely. That's exactly what I was thinking.
Yeah. At one point, I thought, well, I'll go up there and try and get a photo that gives a sense of, were there long lines for the autographs? Were there long lines,
yeah,
for the photo ops? Kind of an overview of that area.
Well, because one thing we did, I guess, at the other one of those was I tried to get some panoramic photos.
Yeah.
I haven't had time to get the photos off the camera yet to know how they may or may not have turned out. But it's one where you've got, because you can walk around, you know, the 360 perimeter of that thing, see just about everything.
Yeah.
Which is kind of nice. One of the things I think makes it fundamentally different than San Diego, because from San Diego, there is no one spot, even if you were at that elevated height, where you could really see everything.
Yes.
It's a good size convention. There's plenty to do. It's not one of those where you spend, you know, an hour and you're done walking it. Because it took us a few hours to go through, but not one where it takes days and days and days like San Diego.
Well, and it has a good array of things in terms of, like, we were coming, it even had sewing machines for the cosplayers.
You know, it's interesting because I saw at least two booths that were that way. There were plenty of booths on other things for cosplay and stuff. And cosplay kind of, sort of, although not exclusively, came out of the convention going experience of people wanting to dress up and stuff, but now it has become a main aspect of the convention going experience. Mm-hmm. And the whole reading the comics, and I mean, people are still seeing the movies and stuff, but that's almost secondary now. It almost feels a little like the cart before the horse.
I was amazed how many booths were selling what felt like accessories for cosplay.
Mm-hmm. There were quite a few. There was also a small stage over in one of those areas where at one point we were walking by, they were doing, somebody was doing the presentation on wigs for cosplay and stuff.
Yes. Yeah.
Which, if you're into that, that could be great information and stuff. So it's cool that they've got that. And again, so many places to go buy, you know, either costumes or accessories or whatnot. But then the fact that it is worth the time for companies that make sewing machines and such to present there. I mean, it makes perfect sense. Mm-hmm. I was actually surprised that I really hadn't seen that at other conventions.
Yeah.
I mean, that why they're not like at wizard conventions and stuff, I don't know. So I thought that was interesting. One of the things we saw, which was really in terms of the booths, the one that stood out in my mind the most, was a company called Crystal Carvings LLC. It's www.doctorwhocrystals.com.
I wonder what their products are.
They're officially licensed products, just to be clear on that. They are, I'm going to say, about 3-inch tall clear crystals with etchings on the outside of the TARDIS. And on the inside, the Doctor.
Yeah.
As if he's, you know, in the TARDIS or whatever. And these things are heavy. I was surprised by that. You can light them up. They've got a base with LEDs and stuff. And it looks just amazing because it catches the etching inside to kind of illuminate the Doctor and stuff. And you're like, which Doctor? Each.
Yeah. And they had one TARDIS that was empty.
Yes. So, I mean, everything from the first Doctor to the 13th Doctor, including the War Doctor and such. They were nice. Really, I thought, well done. I think the normal price is $100. He was offering them for $70. And it was tempting. If I had somewhere to display them and that kind of money to toss around and felt like lugging that kind of a weight. Because, again, they were not light, but very impressive. And I think I took some photos on the cell phone and such.
Yeah. And they were well packaged.
Yes. I would say overall, everything about them was impressive. Mm-hmm. But it's gotten to where when I go to most of these conventions, because I've been getting so many comics for so long, I really don't spend too much time at the comic book booths. I'm not into cosplay and stuff like that, so I really don't spend much time there, that I often don't spend a whole lot. And then the few things that tend to tempt me, if they're that heavy, I don't spend a whole lot. Because just as it was, I think between, you know, the travel out there and stuff, my back was already starting to hurt a bit that day. I'm getting too old for some of this, I think, which is unfortunate. One of the things I did that day was head to the Comics Experience panel on writing comics. This is Comics Experience, the company that Andy Schmidt, a former editor at Marvel and IDW, started up, I think back in around 2007, to help people learn the ropes of writing and other aspects of comic book production. And he's done these sorts of panels before. I always find them very interesting. He had himself, of course, Gene Ha, Kyle Higgins, and Erica Schultz on that panel. And Kyle Higgins is doing Winter Soldier right now. He also did the Power Rangers stuff leading into and through the Shattered Grid storyline. Plus, he's done a number of independent projects through Image and stuff like that. So he had a lot of very good and tangible information. Gene Ha, I found fascinating during this panel. He's, well known as an artist, and he had his iPhone there, and it had like an attachment lens on it that I kid you not was like 2 or 3 inches long. So he was sitting there at various points, you know, fiddling with that, pointing it out towards the audience. And what I realized he was doing is he was getting close-ups of different people in the audience, then using that lens almost like a tripod leg for the cell phone where he could look at it, and he sketched the person. He did it on his own artboard that very clearly had, you know, Gene Ha and stuff, so you would know who did it. And then after he'd spend a few minutes doing that, he'd take it and he'd run out into the audience, go hand it to them. And they're like, what's this? Oh, wow, that's, you know. Mm-hmm. On the one hand, it's a parlor trick. On the other hand, it's a really cool one.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know if he always does that, if that was a new thing or what, but you know, I've read comics he's done for years and years and stuff, and I thought that was a very interesting way to approach a panel, because he was also participating in the panel. You know, there were a couple of times when it got to, oh, from an artist's point of view, what about, you know, and he'd kind of pause a little on the sketching and spend a little more time focusing on that. But when the conversation was just, yeah, uh-huh, or, you know what I mean, not that intensive. So it was cool. It was cool. And it was basically, you know, how to write to where it's conducive for the artist to get you what you want. And Andy Schmidt's done a book on writing for comics. A lot of this was just out of there, plus what the panelists had to say. So I thought that was good. After that, I think I spent the remaining part of the afternoon just walking the floor some more. And that was the day we also did part of the scavenger hunt thing.
Yes, the Star Quest.
They had, in some cases, it was like a tablet thing to where you scan your badge code, and then you scan their QR code. Other places, it was just a QR code hidden somewhere on their booth or sign or something. And we did all that. They had 20, you do 15 of them, and you get a mini poster kind of a thing. And we went ahead, since we had the time, did all 20, most that day, but the others the next day. And I think I got entered to possibly win a free ticket for next year.
Nice.
So.
One or two of them were hard to find.
And one was impossible to scan.
Yes.
We found it fairly easily, but it took us about 4 or 5 minutes just to get the thing scanning. Interesting idea. The clues they had in the app were not as helpful as they could be. Yeah. Oh, it's at this booth in aisle 600. Well, actually, it was over at aisle 1000 on the other end of the thing attached to their booth.
Yeah.
So it was an interesting idea. I'm curious what sort of participation they had in that.
Me too. I did not see many people scanning the QR codes.
There was one point where we were in Artist Alley that there was another pair looking for them. And then when we found the one that was hard to scan, there was another. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it was a high percentage.
There was one person who scanned the one by the store, but it was basically, oh, you guys found it. Thanks. I guess I'll scan it.
Yeah. Scan of opportunity versus.
Yeah.
And there were some that were outside the panel rooms that, oh, it's on the sign for the panel room. That's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting idea. It was not a bad execution, but it was not a brilliant execution either. And it's completely optional. You don't want to do it, you don't do it.
Yeah.
And then I think we wound up leaving a little early that day just because we walked a ton that day.
It was a combination of that and what time the restaurant we were thinking of going to closed.
We wanted to go to Revival Hall, which is a kind of an upscale food court or whatever. And it was only open on weekdays. And this was the only weekday we had there during the convention. And it closed at, you had to eat by, get your food by 7, and the bar stayed open later, I think.
Yeah.
So really good selection of stuff. I think we wound up having sushi and barbecue.
Yeah.
Because we got some stuff from two different places.
And then we went across the street and tried the Amazon Go store.
Yeah, that was kind of interesting. I honestly hadn't even heard of an Amazon Go store before.
Oh, I had.
Okay, not as much, or maybe I had forgotten or something. Basically, you get their app, it gives you a QR code that you scan through the turnstiles as you go in. with your phone and such. You then pick up what you want. In this case, it was some soda for us, Coke Zero for me, ginger ale for you. You take it and you walk out and you're done.
There are no cashiers.
No registers, no nothing. It's literally take it and go. Because they like scan you somehow when you come in and track what you take, and it just, and sure enough, I think within the app it registered immediately. It took about 3 hours to get the email receipt.
Yeah, the person who was doing the restocking explained that when your QR code is scanned, it basically takes a picture of your face, and then they have cameras throughout. They're following your face. And every time you take something, pull it past a certain field. They had, and she showed me these black lines up above. And you pull it past and you keep it and walk away. It says, oh, okay, I attached this item to this person.
It puts it in your virtual cart.
Yeah. And then when you go back through the turnstiles, everything that's in your virtual cart, it checks out to you.
Interesting. I hadn't realized it was doing facial recognition. I thought it was scanning some other way. But interesting approach. I could see we're in a major metropolitan area like Chicago. It works.
Yeah.
I can't see that kind of a thing here in Austin, Texas.
I mean, it was mostly a convenience store, a few basic toiletry items, but not much.
Yeah, it was kind of sort of the convenience store, 7-Eleven-ish sort of a thing that you'd find either at like an airport or gas station sort of a thing.
Yeah.
A little bit more grocery store-ish, but not a whole lot.
Yeah.
You know. So, interesting idea. Was interesting to go to and stuff, and it was right there, so it's kind of a why not. And then Saturday, again, did breakfast going in. We always try to start with a good, solid breakfast, because it's a little harder for us to find food at a convention center. And even if it wasn't, it's a little harder to stomach the prices at a convention center.
Yes.
Some of that was outrageous. It was like $4 for anything to drink, be it a water or a soda or something.
Be it a can or a bottle.
Yeah, it was a little crazy. And I think we got there around 11-ish again, give or take.
Yeah, 10:30, 11, yeah.
Yeah, by the time we got parked and got over there and stuff, because it's a little bit of a hike. Most of it's indoors from the lot we were parking in, which was convenient. And I went to a number of panels that day. I went to the budgeting comics panel from Comics Experience. Again, it was Andy Schmidt. It was Kyle Higgins and David something or other, and maybe one other person. I didn't take good enough notes on that. But it was, again, very much a, you're going to sell so much on your first, it's going to drop, it's going to drop, it's going to drop. By the fifth, you're going to do this. So, you know, figure out how much you're going to pay per page and all these things and figure out if you're going to make money and basically make a budget for your project and stick to it.
Yeah.
You know, it was good information and very clear, you know, hey, if you're going to do like a work for hire kind of a thing, it's got to be a written contract. You should do written contracts regardless. Otherwise, you're going to have problems down the line. Don't spend money you're not willing to lose. I mean, some of it, I don't say is common sense, although it kind of is. But it was fairly actionable information.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Andy Schmidt does a really good job with that. Jim Zub has also done some panels on writing and creating comics and stuff that are also extremely actionable. So I recommend those as well. After that, I went to the Amy Jo Johnson panel.
Mm.
She was the original Pink Ranger for Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. She was 15 minutes late to the hour-long panel. It took at least 10 minutes before somebody came out and said, yeah, don't worry, she's coming. As soon as we find her, we'll get her up there kind of a thing. Actually, it was Claire Kramer who moderated. And it was a good panel. It got off to a little bit of an awkward start because Claire Kramer introduces Amy Jo Johnson, gets her up there, and, oh, you're doing directing now. And, oh, yeah, I got this new thing. Gives the name of the project, which I forget what it was. And
Tammy's Always Dying?
I think it's Tammy's Always Dying. You're right. And she's like, yeah, that's got Felicity Huffman in it. What was that? Oh, let's not talk about Felicity Huffman because the whole college scandal stuff. I thought that was a little bit of a misstep for Claire Kramer's moderation. And normally, for the rest of the panel, she did a really good job.
Yeah, she's a very good moderator normally.
So I was surprised by that.
Yeah.
And they went to questions like maybe after about like 12 or 13 minutes. And given how little time they then had, I get why they did it, but
yeah,
you know, best of a bad situation. And there were a lot of people who were familiar with Amy Jo Johnson, not just from Mighty Morphin Power Rangers, of course, but Felicity and Flashpoint.
Yeah, the cop show.
Yeah. And Amy was talking about how they'd gotten trained, you know, an accelerated brief version of the course that the cops go through, just so they could understand it, do it better. And they had some of the people from the unit on as coaches and technical advisors and such. Because somebody asked what was the thing that was most interesting to learn. Mm. She's like, well, this was kind of cool. After that, I headed back down to the floor over to Artist Alley to go talk with Brian Christman from Comic Geek Speak, Pants over there. Hadn't seen him for a bit. And he used to work for Toys R Us. Toys R Us not doing so well, having, you know, gone under or whatever. So it was good to check in with him. He's doing all right and stuff.
Good.
Seems to have cut back on his reading substantially, which, hey, I've done that too. Not as far as he has. But there, I think for a lot of us, there comes a point where you're not as excited about the stuff as you were at other points. So, you know, it's a phase.
Well, and I think the writers have problems after how many years of, say, Superman coming up with genuinely new stories.
Well, yeah, I think it's the bar is constantly getting raised just through more stories being told, much less a really great story or something. And sometimes what you're really excited about, maybe that genre is not as popular right now, maybe that creator's not doing as much right now or just not driving with you, whatever. As is almost always been the case whenever I see him at a convention, though, Brian had a, hey, let me show you the piece of art I got. He collects original art.
Nice.
And apparently Terry Moore, Strangers in Paradise, keeps everything from the first and last issue of the projects he does. This was from the penultimate issue of Strangers in Paradise, current run that just ended. And it was a page that had some of those lead characters and stuff. And literally it's like, well, what do we do now? Or how long do we got to wait or whatever? Panel, 5 years, panel. I mention that because the next title he's doing, 5 years, is the title of it. So this is almost kind of sort of not the origin of it, but you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And, which is why Brian got it. It's like, okay, that's cool.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not as deep into the Terry Moore stuff, but even I caught the reference and stuff. And nice page, too.
Very cool.
And what's really cool about it is Terry Moore does the lettering and stuff on the page.
Mm.
So you could actually read the page.
Yeah. Several people were talking with me about the fact that more and more you can't read the page when you buy pages.
Yeah. You just get the line work, but you don't get the computerized lettering. This is hand done. So I was impressed by that. It was a fun conversation with him and stuff. He was hanging over at the Benson sisters over in Artist Alley. Mm-hmm. They're writing or I'm not sure if they still are or not, Green Arrow and a few other things. So that was kind of cool. After that, I headed over to another panel. This was the TKO panel. This is a publisher that started up 3-4 months ago in terms of when they actually launched. They'd been around for, I guess, 2.5 years or something. And they're doing kind of a binge release style of comics. They had 4 initial titles, 6 issues each. All of them dropped in December. And you could get it either digitally, trade paperback, or a box set of the 6 issues.
Mm-hmm.
And they got some name people on this stuff. This was the lead guy who also wrote 2 of the titles. Basically, here's what we're trying to do. Here's our mindset. As he was doing that, he was showing off the box sets, opening them up, handing out stuff.
Nice.
And they're a little oversized, which I thought was a little odd and stuff. But he gave, a really good, informal kind of a presentation.
Those were the ones people said didn't fit in bags.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he opened all one of each of the box sets. We had 4 of those, and there's 6 issues each. So there was fewer issues than there were people. It's like, you know, I've already reviewed the first issue of these. I I don't need like the third issue of one of them or something. It's like, yeah, whatever. Yeah. Pass them on. So I didn't need to pick one up. Although, again, interested in what they're doing. One of the titles was one that I liked enough that I would consider getting the box set. That oversized, odd shape, a little bit of an annoyance. And I've just, I'm trying to think if I either pulled the trigger on that through Eric or Eric Cowabunga tried. They couldn't quite get the deal. I forget. But it was good. I think they've got a interesting style on this. They're going to do another wave in the July-August time frame. The idea being doing four titles, six issues of each, bin release every 6 months.
Oh, okay.
And somebody asked, well, are you going to go revisit some of these properties? And go, well, some of them a little harder to do based on where the thing ends because we want a clear beginning, middle, and end. But yeah, if there's more stories to tell in this, absolutely we're open to that. You know, and it sounded like they had some concrete ideas on one or two of the projects for that.
Nice.
But going almost more for a book mentality.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for all intents and purposes, it's original to trade other than the fact they're doing a box set where you can get the individual issues. So there is still an aspect of the chapter break at each issue, if you will.
Yeah.
But it was an interesting idea. They're not publishing superheroes because, well, I mean, DC, Marvel do that fine. They want to branch out into other areas and such. And they were saying that the trades versus the box set, there seemed to be about a 50-50 split on sales.
Mm-hmm.
And that they were happy with how things are selling. They were doing better than they expected to.
Nice.
So that was good. And I think the way they've priced it, the box sets are around $24.95 or something like that, and about $17.95 for the trade or something, which kind of makes sense because it's you get the box around the set, if you will, you know. So I think they've got a good model and an interesting approach on this stuff. And their guiding principles are essentially, is it good for the creators? Is it good for the fans? Is it good for the comic industry? Or good for comics, I guess is the way he phrased it.
Yeah.
So they're trying to do right by everybody.
Nice.
And that includes matching DC and Marvel page rates. Now, it's interesting because they're basically doing everything on a work-for-hire deal. So it's not like they're finding people who want to self-publish and doing that for them. Mm-hmm. These are going to be TKO properties. So the fact, though, that they're matching the page rates of the two major publishers, I thought was good. The difference is the creators get a percentage out of, I guess, the net before expenses. Because Tazit Chun, the lead guy, has been around Hollywood. Mm. Matter of fact, he's done something, I'm a little unclear exactly what, for like Once Upon a Time and such. And he's everybody in Hollywood has either heard or directly seen.
Yeah.
I'm going to get X percent. And then it's like they nickel and dime every expense out of it to where the percent that it's being taken from or whatever is minuscule.
Yeah.
It's like none of that. None of that. And there was, I don't know, 30-ish or so people in the panel, and it was a later in the afternoon panel. So I thought it was, for the size of the room, certainly, it was good attendance. And people were very interested and engaged, had good questions.
Nice.
So it's not like there were just 30 people sitting in the room.
Yeah.
You know, so I thought that was good. And they definitely seem to have a forever in print kind of a mindset. Of we've published it, you want it later, it's going to be available.
Nice.
We'll see how well they can execute on that. It's easy now when you got four, but when you've got other stuff later. Also going to be interesting to see how that plays with the box sets in terms of collectability or something like that.
Yes.
But they're not doing the variant covers. They're not targeting the collectability aspect. They're going for the story. I appreciate that. And apparently all four of the initial titles have already gone back to print. And they're printing them in California. So I was curious going into the panel, and I came out of it impressed with the company and you know how it presented itself and how it seems to be run.
Nice.
So I was happy with that. After that, I went to another panel, and it was Brian Haberlin's Digital Techniques panel, and he was there early setting up his tech and stuff like that because I mean, he's been around the block. You know, you got a couple of devices, you're going to move an HDMI cable between, make sure it works, work with the tech guy. So he comes in prepared, and I respect that. This was more on augmented reality type stuff. Mm-hmm. And he was saying how virtual reality seems to be a little bit in the decline, augmented reality on the upswing, because a lot of people don't like to be sitting there essentially with blinders on their face, you know, cutting them off from the real world for virtual reality. Certainly, there's a hardcore gaming group that's going to love that. But for the mainstream, he's thinking it's gearing more towards augmented reality.
I can see that.
He had compelling arguments and stuff or stuff on that.
Well, I've been noticing some of the magazines I read have had some of the augmented reality, you know, make sure and remember to have our app on your phone and hold it over this page whenever you see the logo that has this or the other in the corner.
And the stuff he does in his comics with that is just crazy. There was one with Faster Than Light where you do that, you launch the app, and now you can walk around virtually the spaceship the thing's set on.
Nice.
You know, and he was going, well, if you do this and you've got a 3D model, boom, you can print it, you could do, and just had some really great examples of stuff.
Yeah, that's very cool.
And let's see, what else did he have? Oh, he's got an upcoming 32-page comic on like how-to stuff with augmented reality. So you can actually see somebody sketching the stuff out. So it's not like circle, circle, done.
Yeah.
You know, the old, you know, joke of the how to draw, you know, things.
Yes.
Oh, you do a circle here, you draw some lines here, and then magic happens and you've got the fully rendered thing. So that'll be cool. And then he's got another project, Sonata or something like that, that I think is in the current previews that's for April coming out.
Okay.
But he showed a little bit with iClone. He also showed a lithophane, which is a term I hadn't heard of. It was a 3D print that you hold it up, let the light shine through it, and you see the image. Because of the thickness is going to do different levels of light and stuff like that. It allows you to effectively do a grayscale kind of a thing in a tangible form. Without it being an etching or something. Yeah. Almost a reverse of an etching, I guess. But he showed a couple of different things, character creators, and how with some of them you do the dialogue, it'll lip sync it, you do this, it'll do some motion and stuff, and it was really cool.
That sounds awesome.
So his panels are always fun to go to just to see kind of what can be done. Mm-hmm. And you're not going to come out of there being a master of any particular technique, but it's definitely one of those kind of eye-opening, oh, I hadn't thought about that. You know, you could do this sort of a thing. That's a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's very cool.
And then that one ran a little longer than the floor did. So by the time I got done with that, I met you guys outside and we headed out to dinner. Mm-hmm. We did Life Kitchen that night?
Yes.
Had a really good burger there. I was, again, very happy with how we've been eating on these trips.
Yes.
The friends we hang out with appreciate a good meal.
Yes.
And do really good research.
I was going to say, we appreciate them finding us a good meal.
I have yet to have a bad meal with them.
Yeah.
And they're just fun to hang out with, too. A lot of fun. That gets us to Sunday. Once again, we started with a good breakfast. And surprisingly, we actually got there earlier than we thought.
Yeah, about 10:15.
Because this was also the day that the Shamrock Shuffle was going on.
Yes.
And we were going to go one route to the convention center, except it got totally blocked off. So we essentially did a glorified U-turn and headed the other way.
Yes, it was called Shuffle Your Route for the Shamrock Shuffle.
Yeah. But we got to see it. So tourist points, I guess. Mm-hmm. But that got us there in time for the 11 a.m. panels. And we thought about going to David Tennant. But with the C2E2 is really good about knowing how many people are in the room, how many seats are available. And going far enough down the line, it's like, hey, you're not going to get in.
Yeah.
They don't want you to waste your time standing in line for no point. If you want to stay, you're welcome to. But that allowed us to go head over, instead of the David Tennant one, over to the Summer Glau panel. Mm-hmm. And I thought she did a really good job on the panel.
Yeah.
It was clear she was there in the moment, giving a lot of thought to the questions and trying to give a good answer. Because there are some celebrities that are, you ask a question, oh, that's a great question. They'll ramble almost on something else for a few minutes. Did I answer your question? Good. Next.
Yeah.
You know.
There are some that are so busy trying to get laughs.
Yes.
That you don't feel a sense of sincerity, whether or not they are sincere, because you can tell they're trying so hard for laughs. And you could tell there were times when she was disappointed with herself that she couldn't find the levity in the moments. and stuff, but she wasn't going to go for cheap laughs or forced laughs when they just didn't come naturally.
Yes. I think there were also a couple of times she thought she could have given a better answer, even if it wasn't necessarily a funnier answer. But
yeah.
Kind of a, if I were in your position, would I be happy with that kind of?
Mm-hmm. There was a really funny question from a kid, in part because of how he started it, which was, my parents have lost the DVD for Firefly.
Oh, yeah.
But they tell me that if I could see it with them, I'd really like it. Will you tell me about the show and why they think I'd like it?
And then she essentially pitches Firefly from River's perspective.
Yes.
Half in character.
Yes.
She did a really good job on that.
It's a world where there are good people and bad people. And I'm one of the good people, though some people don't seem to know that.
Or some disagree.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's okay to mutter to yourself. Yeah, there was some great stuff.
Yeah. She doesn't take herself too seriously, but she takes herself seriously enough.
Yeah.
It was fun. There was also one of somebody asking of how she's gotten known for being on shows that and then they get canceled sort of a thing. And the moderator, it's like, no, there's another way to look at it. The show she's on hit cult status very quickly.
Yes, yes.
She's like, ooh, good rebranding. I'm going to remember that one.
Yes. Well, and she was saying that she actually doesn't mind having that reputation because she says it means people have noticed my work.
Yes, they care what shows I'm on.
Yeah.
So I don't know that she's always had that opinion. I think we saw her somewhere else where she hadn't gotten to that point yet.
Yeah.
And I can understand that.
Yeah.
So I would have liked going to the David Tennant one too. We had to choose. So I was happy with what we did. But
yeah.
So after that, it had dawned on me that it's at that point noon on Sunday and I hadn't even gone through Artist Alley.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I should go do that. And really, I should have done that earlier in the convention. I didn't.
They have a big Artist Alley.
They've got a huge Artist Alley. It's got A through Z in terms of aisles. Now, they do one side of an aisle for each letter. But they've got two rows of tables, so, I don't know, 20 people per letter?
Yeah.
26 letters, do the math. I mean, it's a lot.
Mm-hmm. And they're 8-foot tables?
Yeah.
Yeah, good size.
It seems like a really good show for an artist to be at.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of how they seem to get treated in terms of the opportunity, size of table, two chairs behind it, stuff like that. But I talked to a number of people. Dave Dwanch, who has done a lot of stuff over at Action Lab.
Mm.
Matter of fact, he actually used to run Action Lab before he decided to step down and focus more on his creator-owned stuff. He seems to be doing pretty well. Tom Zoller, always enjoy talking with him. I'll no doubt talk more with him at San Diego and such. He was saying he's going to be bringing back Love and Capes.
Oh, nice.
Which is a great property. He's just got such a great knack for storytelling and whatnot, and such a humble guy. I really think that DC in particular is got, if they had him heading up kind of one of these, I forget what they call these imprints that they're doing that are catered imprints, like the Young Animal stuff that Gerard Way did, the Wonder Comics that Bendis is doing. I think Zoller has certainly enough love for the DC universe, although probably Marvel and others, but he could do, I almost want to say, a Saturday Morning Comics kind of all ages take on a more classic tone on this stuff. Not to say he'd necessarily write and draw all of it, but his stuff with Love and Capes and other titles is so accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And just good storytelling.
Yeah.
You know, I'd love to see that sort of thing happen. Not to the point where it would mean he couldn't do creator-owned stuff, because, man, I love what he's doing there, too. I just think that this is somebody who the fandom really hasn't discovered yet to the point I think it should have.
Yeah.
So he's always a blast to talk to. Talk to Mike Norton. Good chat with him. He's got some more Battle Pug stuff coming out. A few other projects currently being published and whatnot, so he seems to be doing well, which is good. And then Steve Bryant of Athena Voltaire, talked with him and stuff. That's also over at Action Lab. talked to a couple other people here and there and stuff, but those were the main ones. Again, just crazy big artist alley. There were a couple that it's like had some art that I was tempted to pick up. I don't really display art and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But there were a couple that had some work that definitely caught my eye because it was both a style I liked and the like. One of them had a good shot of the cast of second season of Young Justice cartoon. That's cool. And I'm like, I wonder if he's got the first and maybe the third, you know, kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So that was fun. After that, I think the two of us headed over to the Sci-Fi Wire.
Yeah.
Where they had a small stage, an audience for the streaming stuff they were doing live for Sci-Fi. Mm-hmm. And we did it when Tyler Hoechlin was there, Superman on Supergirl.
Well, we got there at about 1:36.
Yeah, when somebody else should have been up there.
Yeah, I know this because the monitor kept scrolling through the schedule and then saying the time is. And what we realized was the monitor was showing us what people watching the live stream were seeing. And the 1:30 interview had apparently not shown up. So nothing went out over the live stream in its place.
I'm curious if the stream is available after the fact.
Me too.
Because I'd like to rewatch the interview with Tyler Hoechlin. It was a good interview. Mm-hmm. But the reason I want to rewatch it is in the audience, it felt one way. But it seemed to be that we just happened to be there.
Yeah, it seemed like it was aimed at the streaming audience.
To the point that they would come in, introduce themselves to the streaming audience, do the thing, exit to the streaming audience, and then just get up and leave.
Yeah.
And they were not being, like, rude to the live audience. Certainly not.
No, but when the camera, when they said goodbye to the streaming audience and the camera cut, they got up and they walked away without waving to the live audience or anything.
And that was more, in my mind, the moderator. I thought Tyler in particular was definitely interacting with the audience.
Yes. Well, and that's the interesting thing, because I went later to Amy Jo Johnson also on the same stage, and both of them were trying to balance how do you interact with the live audience, because they could make the streaming audience feel like they were part of the live audience they were interacting with. But the moderators were so focused on there's no mic on the live audience that I can't risk dead air or something that the streaming audience isn't seeing or feeling they're part of.
Yeah, and that's just you're serving two masters there and it's hard.
Yeah.
But being physically there, I think's got to be worth something.
Yes.
So it was an interesting idea. I don't know if it was the best execution of it or not. It was not a bad execution, but man, it did not hold a whole lot of people, and they were short segments they were doing with in some cases, some big name people.
Yeah.
So I skipped a number of things. Oh, it's over there, that tiny little thing. It seemed like it'd be more trouble to get over there. And
well, and they had all the speakers aimed into the square where it was taking place.
Yeah.
So if you couldn't get a chair or be on the carpet, even if you were just a foot or two away, you couldn't clearly hear what was being said.
Which is nice because it was on the main hall.
True. And in that respect, it was good.
But it was a small seating area.
Yeah.
The upside to that is I didn't think we were that far from the talent.
True. But I'd say between a fifth and a quarter of what could have been seating area was roped off as clear sight line for the camera to make sure like nobody crossed between the two sections and accidentally got their head on the camera or in frame.
Yes, I agree with that. So it was interesting. I'm glad I sat through one of them.
Mm-hmm.
After that, I headed up to the Wolfman and Perez panel. Marv Wolfman is starting to have a little bit of hearing problems. So there were a couple of times George and the moderator had to kind of, you know, recap the question for him. And part of it is these things are mic'd such that on stage goes out to the audience, even with the question in the audience getting back to the stage, it's just not quite geared for that.
Yeah.
They can't project the sound that loudly up there lest it get into the microphones, cause feedback.
Yeah.
But the audio guy, when it came time for questions, got to the point where he basically had his tablet computer with him to control stuff and was literally right there by the mic in the audience. Mm. So when people are coming, I mean, you've got some people that are very tall, some that are not so much.
Yeah.
He was there repositioning the mic to the best angle for them and stuff, and then double checking the audio and stuff. Did a fantastic job, and I think it made it a lot easier for Marv to hear what was going on for the questions.
Nice.
These two, Wolfman and Perez, have worked together since the 80s. Not nonstop, but they knew each other even worked together before then. At one point, Marv was even an editor over George and giving him some, there's no background here. There's no, nothing mean. But it came up when George was like, what advice would you give your younger self? And it's not to take it personally.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, there's no background. I'll show you background.
Yes. Yes.
Little did he know what would become, kinds of comments. It was funny, though, because those two, particularly when they were on New Teen Titans and Crisis and stuff back in the day, apparently only lived like 6 blocks or something from each other. Mm. And there was a diner that was convenient. They'd often meet there, hash out the story and all that kind of stuff. They're clearly exceptionally good friends. They both have a huge amount of love, admiration, respect for each other. And just the compliments that were going back and forth at times. Of, George saying that Marv is the gold standard by which I judge every other collaborator, kind of a thing. And particularly when the question at one point came up of how did Jericho get created? Jericho was a member of the New Teen Titans that was mute. Mm. Okay. Matter of fact, trying to think if we've seen him in one of the CW shows. Anyways. And it basically came down to, Marv saying, it was all George. It was his idea. He's the one that made the character work, whatever. Yet it was basically, in a comic, if he's mute, but you do thought balloons, well, it may as well be a speech bubble at that point. So
yes.
No thought balloons. All of Jericho had to be conveyed by the art. I mean, George Perez, you've got the body language, you've got the acting, you've got the facial expressions. You can do that. George leaves the book.
Oh, yeah.
Most other artists didn't know how to handle the character. And at one point, Marv turned him into basically a psychotic killer or whatever. So, yeah, it was a mistake. It was a stupid idea. You're on a book for 16 years, you're going to do some stupid stuff, kind of a kicking himself sort of a thing. And it was funny because George had said that he felt that was the one character he'd kind of abandoned out of all of his children or whatever, but seemed to have zero animosity towards the way the character was handled after the fact, even by Marv, and just it was a great, huge audience, a lot of love and respect for both of those creators. Who are literally legendary creators. There's close to the collaboration between Stanley and Jack Kirby and stuff as I think you can get in the Bronze Age.
Nice.
So it was a ton of fun. I knew George was retiring because of health issues. It seems like he's developing glaucoma. Mm. So it's already gotten to the point where at one point he could do like 2 pages a day. So not only was he crazy detailed, he was fast.
Yeah.
And good. But now it's gotten to the point where, he can still finish a page, but he's got to scan it, blow it up, and use Photoshop just so I can see it.
Yeah.
Which is such a shame. And it would still, he says he can do it, but it'll take like 2 weeks to do a page. But he was also very thankful that if this had to happen to anybody, and let's face it, it's going to happen to people. As an artist, he was very glad it happened to him. Versus a lot of these other artists that are out there that are working paycheck to paycheck, would be a death sentence for a lot of them.
Yeah.
But because he created the New Teen Titans and has done so much other stuff, he's got decent royalty stuff coming in. He's doing okay.
Nice. Yeah.
This just means good. He gets to spend more time with his family.
Yeah, that's fortunate.
So his attitude on this is just outstanding. And again, the impact both of those two have had on the industry, just insane. Incredible work and stuff, and both of them are just genuinely really good guys. So it was a lot of fun, a lot of fun. Nice. Afterwards, met up with Mike Myers, who does Geek Brunch and a couple other podcasts. He's been podcasting about as long, maybe longer than I have. I'm not sure exactly when he started, but around 2007-ish.
Nice.
Give or take a year in either direction. He buys more than I do, even when I hadn't cut back. But he's got more of a library mentality. He phrased it as he's a mood reader. He's in the mood. He'll plow through some stuff. Otherwise, it'll stack up. I'll get to it. Really fun talking with him and his co-host for a bit. Both of them are working on doing comics. Co-host hasn't found an artist. Mike has, apparently one he's known for a while through having gotten sketches done or whatever. I am very curious what those projects are going to turn out to be and stuff. Certainly, I hope they'll consider sending copies over to the comic book page for us to either do as a bonus book or something like that.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Be fun. Because, I mean, Mike has read so much. His collection's about the same size as mine, maybe a little bigger, a little smaller. Neither of us seem to have an exact count, I guess. I certainly don't. But his tastes run a little different than mine. But when you read that many, you start to get a sense of what works, what doesn't. Whether you can then translate that into doing a story.
Yeah.
Maybe you can, maybe you can't. Don't know. I'm very curious. He seems like he's got a good shot. After that, headed back over to Artist Alley, talked to a couple of more people there. And then we did dinner at...
Roti.
Yeah, Mediterranean place. Good food. Really enjoyable. And then that night, what did we do? We did the drive down to Oconomowoc.
Up, over to wherever.
We had gotten a rental car and drove from Chicago up there. It's about a 2-ish hour drive, a little over.
Yeah.
I would say for me, the most traumatic part was getting the rental car out of downtown. Not a big fan of huge downtowns, and Chicago has one. Cold, wet, dark, but not so cold. It was freezing, so that was good.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny that I've now got a comic shop that to go to, I need a hotel room.
Well, yeah. And a plane ticket, preferably.
Hell of a commute. But we spent Sunday night there, got up Monday morning at the hotel, had breakfast there. That was one that was frankly a little nerve-wracking because, yeah, I need gluten-free, dairy-free. And the waitress is like, I don't know what that is. You get what you get. That's reassuring. Thank you. Mm. We seem to be okay, although I think I got at least a little cross-contamination, just minor side effects. Nothing serious, but noticeable. But we did that and then headed over to Cowabunga Comics. Got there at 9:45-ish.
Yeah.
So got to get in there before the store actually opened and stuff. That gave us time to look around. Nice store.
Some beautiful natural light up in the front that flows back towards the back.
Good arrangement of the store. I spent at least an hour, maybe hour and a half-ish, somewhere in there, with the guys upstairs in the gaming area, and we recorded an episode that'll go up probably in a few weeks. It's going to take me a little time to get to the editing of it, but it'll be a retailer spotlight on Cowabunga. But I was really impressed. It was a intuitive layout. Oh, this is where the new comics are. Here's where the trades are, the action figures, the games. You could find where things were.
Yes.
Easy to walk around in. They had a really good selection of stuff. After we recorded, because James had mentioned they'd had some early Justice League issues in their back issue bins. I'm like, I should check those out. I did. And found a surprising number of the early JSA team-up issues I didn't have, because there were a couple that I didn't have. Got those. And of course, the beautiful thing about shopping there is since I'm doing the mail order there, they'll ship them home.
Yeah.
Gets them here in better condition than I would have had room for, because I didn't have space in the backpack and the rollerboard. But yeah, I spent, not a crazy amount, probably only about less than $100, I think, but, got a good size stack of some early Justice League issues, a few other things here and there, being able to flip through the new Marvels with the annotated stuff. I think I should get those. Stuff like that. So it was fun checking out the store. They've got a really good place there. And man, when I was walking around and I spotted the display of the artist editions. Because it's a two-story area, particularly up by the front where the register is and stuff. And they've got that upper section. They had at least 24 of the artist editions up there. And they're big items, so you can see them clearly from below and stuff. And it's like it was a very impressive display. Yeah. As was their wall books, as was, you know, everything there. Again, it took about 2 hours to get there from Chicago, but I think it's well worth the trip and stuff if you can make it. I certainly enjoyed it. Thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And then from there, we drove back to Chicago that afternoon, did dinner again with the friends, and then the next day we flew home.
You make flying home sound so easy, but yes, then we flew home.
We flew home. We had lunch with one of the friends who got us to the airport, got there. And it, you know, it's one of those things that this is the second trip we've done where we've flown. And
the second trip this year
where we can use the phrase, and the second time we boarded the plane for the flight home.
Yes. So yes. We'll just hope next time we fly this year it goes better. And nobody died this time.
Nobody died this time, so it was better than the Norway trip.
I feel obligated to say nobody died, nobody was injured, all was good.
We get on the plane, it's Chicago to Austin. They are doing the safety video and stuff. They pull back, then they stop. And I noticed we haven't gone very far. They stop for a while. And then it turns out, as they're bringing us back to the gate, that there was a little something up that they need to have a judgment call done on.
By maintenance.
And the pilot or co-pilot, whichever was doing it, seemed a little, I guess, distracted.
Yeah.
This didn't seem like a routine kind of, oh, we'll just have them check this.
Well, they sounded decidedly disconcerted, and they weren't saying, you know, a light came on. Because so often pilots will say a light has come on that, you know, indicates we need to have maintenance come check something. There was no clear cut
thing. There was an issue in the cockpit.
Yes.
Well, what turns out, after they've gotten us back there, yep, we're going to have to switch planes. Everybody gets off. We go to another gate, get into the other plane eventually and stuff like that. Same pilot and crew and stuff. He's, let me tell you what happened. We were on the other one, and there was a little bit of smoke coming out of the cockpit panel yoke. Or whatever.
Hmm? The yoke for the co-pilot.
Yeah. And it was unusual. So, you know, basically it seemed like there may have been a minor electrical fire in the cockpit that they decided better safe than sorry, let's get a different plane and use that.
Yeah.
So kudos for them for doing that. That would have potentially been a very different story otherwise. Yeah. But it'd be nice to have a nice
boring
trip home. Now the other thing that I feel obligated to mention, since we're talking about trips home, which brings to mind the Norway trip, of course, which had a very horrible flight home. But if you haven't listened and don't know the story behind that, it was in Weekly Comic Spotlight 598.
Okay, that's fine. I didn't know what number.
Yeah, we talked about the worst flight ever. That was coming home from a cruise in Norway on the Viking Sky.
Yes.
While we're at C2E2, there's news reports that you were showing me of the Viking Sky in Norway, in hellacious weather conditions, having no power, and having people taken off by helicopter.
One passenger at a time.
Literally the same cruise ship we had been on 2 months earlier, same itinerary we'd been on that cruise ship 2 months earlier.
Yeah.
So thankful that hadn't happened to us.
Yes. Yes. There are always things to be thankful for.
Yeah, as inconvenient or rough as some things can be, and some are more than others, it always can get worse, it seems like.
Yeah.
So once we got that second plane from Chicago actually in the air and stuff, it was smooth sailing.
Yeah.
But it was a good couple of day trip. It was a lot of fun doing the side trip to Oconomowoc to go check out Cowabunga. A lot of fun. Very glad I did that. Had a good time at C2E2.
I really enjoy C2E2. For me, it's a great convention for seeing friends, for walking the floor, for just getting a feel. What are people cosplaying these days? Mm-hmm. What characters are resonating with people? And just the interaction time. I enjoyed the panels. This year, there were fewer panels that were a draw for me. But part of that is I go for the movie and the TV stuff. And I have feeling this year I was going more for the friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's always the question, do you plan to go next year? Right up until Sunday afternoon, my answer was, well, of course, you know, I love coming to this convention. Then we heard what the dates were for next year.
Yeah, end of February.
So, you know, maybe not next year.
February, it's Chicago, it's going to be cold. And I'm not a big fan of that.
No, No, it might be snow. No.
Yeah, that's not ruling it out.
Just hesitating, but sincerely.
Gotta give it some thought. There's got to be a very compelling reason.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see. Again, I like it because it's a good-sized convention. There's plenty to see and do, yet it's not overwhelming. You can usually get into any panel you want to. Some maybe you got to get in line a little earlier, but...
Yeah.
And again, tons of artists there, and there's just a lot of podcasters and such either in the Chicago area or who come to it. You know, there's usually a lot of people I can hang with there in addition to the friends we've got there. And it's a different enough mix of vendors and stuff than, say, San Diego that it's cool.
Yeah.
So to me, it's kind of at that sweet spot of size. It's big, but not too big.
Yeah, I agree.
But yeah, end of February, a bit harder of a sell than end of March.
Yeah.
They'd gone end of April? That's pretty easy.
Yeah, exactly.
Going to May? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But yeah, we're going to have to think about that one. But if you don't mind cold weather, it is a great convention. It's a good convention center. It's well used. Again, they monitor how many people are in the rooms. That's easy to deal with. Nice big wide aisles, so getting around on the floor is never a problem.
Yeah.
Even when somebody, oh, let me take a photo of this person in the costume. In San Diego, that just bottlenecks things.
Yeah.
Here, hell, we just walk around it. Not a big deal.
Yeah.
So, anything else?
I think that does it.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.